So this is a budget that's changing lives. There are some numbers attached to it, but the numbers aren't important. What's important are the lives. And there's a lot of lives that are going to be improved because of the proposals that we are making.
Well, that's Governor Jay Inslee talking about the lives he says will see a positive impact with the new supplemental budget proposal he released last week. So who will benefit from this budget? Plus, what about the big investments the governor wants to make regarding climate change? And what about the people who oppose those investments? And can we at long last see some relief from our ferry system? Well, we've got a lot going on this week, a lot to cover this week in a special Patrons First episode for Seattle News, Views, and Brews, your coffee break political podcast. I'm Brian Callanan. I'm a host for Seattle Channel. The views expressed here are mine. And my special guest for the podcast this week is Democratic Senator Joe Wenn, chair of the Energy, Environment, and Technology Committee, representing the 34th District, straight out of White Center. Senator Wenn, thank you for joining me. How you doing?
Good, good. How are you doing? Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, I'm great. And it's really great to have you. If you didn't know it, folks, Senator Wenn and I are kind of neighbors in the West Seattle area.
Yep.
So it's always good to connect with the people who are right near to you. So I appreciate it very much, Senator. Thanks for doing this. Thanks also to our patrons. A shout out this week to Brian G., who has been a supporter of the show for a full year now since Christmas Day of 2022. Thank you, Brian. If you want to be a patron like Brian, get access to our Patrons First podcast before anybody else. Find Seattle News, Views, and Brews on Patreon. Become a patron at the relatively painless $5 level. We'll even throw in your very own Seattle News, Views, and Brews decal. Great deal there. Thanks also to Converge Media. The video version of the podcast is on Converge Wednesday nights at 7. All right, let's get started with right here, right now. Senator Wenn, let's go big picture first, if we could. I'm seeing some highlights from the governor's $71 billion supplemental budget proposal that include behavioral health, fighting the opioid crisis, housing homelessness, some school workers, too. What stands out to you from the governor's proposal? Where do you have questions, maybe?
Yeah, and just to clarify as well, so I'm the chair of the Energy, Environment, and Technology Committee. I'm also now the vice chair of Ways and Means. So the budget itself is a big deal in terms of the work that I'll be doing next year. The overall budget is 72, but in the supplemental, we're going to be playing with a smaller number. So, for instance, you know, we've been able to have a pretty robust economy, surprisingly, through this last cycle, where we're going to see about $4.4 billion more than what we had forecasted since last year. But we also have a lot more need in our communities as well. So the true up, so the actual budget that we were playing with is in the two-ish billion dollar range for us to kind of to help our Washingtonians locally as well. You know, obviously, one of the biggest components that I'll be focused on is going to be the Climate Commitment Act and work associated with climate policies as a whole, making sure that we do a good job implementing the policies that we put into place, making sure that the investments get out as fast as possible. Obviously, there's an initiative that is out there as well that we'll have to consider and then try to understand what that means in terms of what legislation could potentially be. But at the end of the day, I think from a climate perspective, I think the fact that we're seeing heat domes, the fact that we're seeing smoke on a constant basis, the fact that, you know, we're getting AC in Seattle when we've never had them before just because of the rising temperatures, this is on the forefront of people's minds. But we would be mindful of the impacts that they may have on regular Washingtonians as well.
Got it. And I'm going to come back to those climate issues in just a little bit, but I did want to talk about some of the other pieces here. I really noticed some big changes when it came to behavioral health. We're talking about potentially an additional $464 million. Yeah, let me know about that. Why is that important? And I know this is building on some of the work the legislature did earlier this year for this next 2 years, the biennium to build new beds, et cetera. What's going on with behavioral health?
Yeah, I think a lot of it, if you look at the root cause of some of the issues that we're facing as a society, specifically around homelessness, behavioral health and behavioral health crisis really feeds into that. And we've spent a number of millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars on the new facilities. I think the other component is ensuring that we have the appropriate staff to make sure that those facilities are being well run and taken care of by the people who have the expertise in that space. We had to put some one-time funding to help augment some of the compensation for folks just to ensure that there's a workforce that's there as well. But for us to have long-term, you know, positive impacts within our communities, we need behavioral health responders to address some of the crises that we're seeing right now. And that's reflected in the governor's budget.
And I guess substance abuse, I'm just going to kind of go down the list here because I think this is another part of this too. The governor is talking about another $64 million for the 2024 session. And it sounds like the governor is really trying to focus on the opioid and fentanyl epidemic. And I just wanted some thoughts on that too, because I think that's a component too, I guess, an adjunct to behavioral health in some ways.
Yeah, and I think really what you're seeing is kind of a holistic approach to public safety, right? So a lot of the issues that we face on our streets, the public safety issues that we're facing are folks in varying states of behavioral health or drug addiction or needs that they have within the communities themselves. So the goal is, if you can address the root cause of these issues, if you can help every corner of Washington State be successful when it comes to dealing with the fentanyl crisis, that's how we truly get public safety right for our communities as well. I'm not sure if that's going to be listed within the list that you have, but we also last year funded more training facilities for law enforcement as well. Most folks don't know that the process to become a law enforcement official, you basically have to move to Berrien, which happens to be where I'm from, so it's not a bad thing, enforcement official. But if you were, but if you're from Yakima, if you're from Walla Walla, if you're from Spokane, it's kind of a tough sell to move out here to get trained up. So we funded and are building new facilities across the state, so that way people from their own communities can live and train and become law enforcement officials as well. So it's kind of this holistic approach to public safety that's very thoughtful, that's very scientific, that's data-driven to ensure that we have the best outcomes for the folks who are here.
Thank you. And that's a really good point about these different training facilities. I know it's something that as the Seattle Police Department, other police departments really try to make sure they're getting new officers, et cetera. The recruiting, the training of officers is such a critical issue. I appreciate that part of it, too. I wonder if you could dive into the housing and homelessness part, because I remember not too long ago, I think it was a couple weeks ago, the governor was actually in Seattle around the South Park area in your district, and he was talking about some of the work that the state has done to help clean up encampments, et cetera. Can you talk about this? Because it looks like the governor's asking for the stat. I saw an additional $140 million for housing and homelessness. I think increasing some affordable housing in the mix here. Talk to me about the housing and homelessness issue, if you could, Senator Wendt.
Yeah, no, great. And that was done by the First Avenue Bridge. So I'm not sure I drive by that on a regular basis. And obviously, it's just not a safe environment for the folks who are there. It's not humane. It's not a dynamic that you would want to have exist for somebody you care about and you love. And part of that is building upon some of the work that we did previously, where for areas that are under the jurisdiction of the state, so WashDOT properties, we want to make sure that we are able to have the resources to offer assistance, to offer housing, to ensure that people who are experiencing homelessness have a place to go. So a lot of the funding associated with that isn't so much a sweep of the encampment. It is ensuring that the people who are there have the resources that they need in order to find stable, supportive, and safe places to be. So that's part of it as well. I think one of the biggest ones that we've seen around affordable housing last year in our capital budget was probably the largest investment towards affordable housing in my memory, which is limited because I've only been here for 5 years, but I think in probably record in terms of Washington State as well. We know that we are significantly short in terms of affordable housing. We need a tremendous amount more for us to be able to actually get this under control. So there's a lot of work for us to be done there. I know that there's going to be some proposals. I don't think it was in the governor's budget, but there's proposals around revenue to help fund affordable housing. That'll be a big deal. But even our local jurisdictions have been asking for that as well. So affordable housing, behavioral mental health, like you said, all part of the game plan.
Yeah, I keep hearing these different numbers, Senator Wendt, because the city of Seattle just wrapped up its budget process and was talking about some of the largest investments in affordable housing they've ever made. But I think it really speaks to, I guess, the difficulty raising prices and all these kind of things. The challenge I always see with this is trying to figure out that short term, okay, we got to get people inside, but then the long term, we need to build that housing too. I know it's a both and conversation, but it's a really challenging one when I talk to people about these issues and say, yeah, we've got some legislators, we've got some local governments working on it, but I don't know. Can you talk to me about the two sides there, the short term and the long term when you're tackling this issue?
Well, the hard part is that, you know, all of this is impossible without a good partnership with your local jurisdictions. Whether you're in Wakayakum or whether you're in Seattle, it doesn't matter. You have to be able to partner with your local jurisdictions. And whenever you have, you know, thankfully for us in Washington State, a robust economy where you have industries that have been doing very well, like in the technology sector, like in aerospace, other places like that, you'll see kind of this increased demand on the services and the resources that you have now. So for me, a lot of the short-term goals that we have in terms of addressing homelessness, and this is just me speaking, we need to have more temporary shelters. We need to have, you know, tiny houses. We need to have kind of all the options on the table, because for us, getting people in a safe and stable place, that's how you get them into a spot where they can be whole and they can then, you know, have more of a long-term solution, like supportive housing or like permanent housing. We've seen that be very successful. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that takes time, and that takes time more than we actually have. So for us, I think the sad part is we're trying to play catch up in the legislature, and we're trying to play catch up in a dynamic where we have to have our local partners with us as well. And I wish we can go faster. I wish we could invest more. And that's kind of the conversation that we'll probably have next year when it comes to some of the housing. You'll see some controversial, semi-controversial housing policies around density. That's all kind of part of this as well.
Right. I remember that debate over missing middle housing in this last session. And I know these kind of talks are continuing. Yeah, but before we jump back to climate investments, I wanted to touch on one last piece before there. It looked like there is some more work being done on the education front. As I saw it from the governor's proposal, $64 million looking to raise salaries of the paraeducators in the state, really trying to focus on special education, I know, here too. Can you talk to me about this education investment? Because I know at least in the District of Seattle, you've got a lot of parents who are concerned about special education for sure, and actually seeing potentially some schools closing down, et cetera. Can you talk to me about education, what's going on there, please?
Yeah, education by itself is very difficult. That might be a whole show by itself in terms of how it's funded, whether it's on the operating side or the building facilities. But what I'll say is last year, through the main operating budget, we did have historic investments in special education. The supplemental, what you'll see in the governor's budget, is raising what's called the cap. So right now there's a percentage cap in terms of what you could potentially spend on special education. It's a formula for another day that we can debate as well. But in terms of the paraeducators and special educators themselves, this happens to be a very near and dear to my heart. My wife is a special education teacher in the Seattle school districts, and we know that there's a tremendous amount of need in that space. And for us to serve the whole student, that that includes folks with IEPs, and that includes those that have special education needs as well. And that historically has been one of the most difficult positions to fill. So in the area with the greatest amount of need happens to be the most difficult to fill, because the people who are doing it aren't, you know, going to get compensated much more than what you would get potentially at a Starbucks or somewhere else. So we have to ensure that we're being competitive when it comes to wages for the folks who are doing this tremendous amount of work. And that's what you're going to see in that proposal.
I am very interested to look at that. That's it's a very interesting conversation we're having in the city of Seattle too, when it comes to making sure that people are doing social work, very important work that's difficult, and making sure their wages are in the right place. Thank you for breaking all those down. I want to move on to our next piece here with you, Senator Wynn, if I could. Looking at the governor's proposal more closely on climate action and clean energy, Senator Wynn providing some more insight on that and talking a little bit about some of the pushback on these measures too. That's coming up next on Now Hear This. Okay, so last week, Governor Inslee also visited Seattle to talk a little bit more about his plans regarding climate action and clean energy. This is a $941 million plan, which includes a push for better transparency over gas prices, a potential proposal to link with California and Quebec on the carbon market, some benefits for residents who want to stop using natural gas, and more.
We have help for Washingtonians to get assistance with more insulation and more heat pumps. We now are degasifying and removing methane, which is so dangerous and toxic to our children. But we know that there is more to do. So this year, we're going to start by making sure we're keeping the Climate Commitment Act. We are not going backwards. We're going forward to reduce pollution in the state of Washington.
So, Senator Wynn, looking at this, the governor's call for a $941 million investment into climate action, I think this is on top of what the legislature had set aside in the 2023 session towards this goal. I guess I just wanted to ask this basic question of why is more investment needed, and what's your take on what the governor is asking for?
Yeah, so this would be, in fact, on top of what we had allocated this last year, which is totally expected. We knew that there was the revenues coming in. We also wanted to make sure that we had a healthy reserve just in case it either went up or down. But long story short, obviously, we know that climate policies are important to Washington State. We are hit with wildfire smoke every single year now. We've seen heat domes that have killed hundreds of people. We're seeing the devastations of climate change on our crops, on our local communities, and in overburdened communities where there's a disproportionate amount of pollution that's happening. So this is one of the key priorities that I've heard from my constituents and throughout Washington State. I think in terms of the proposals that Governor Inslee has, it's more on the nuances, right? When we implemented these policies, it was done in good faith. And obviously, you know, we cannot control the oil companies per se in Washington state. So we can require them to have transparency in the work that they're doing. The costs associated with it, you know, if you look at Washington state, we've been one of the highest fuel prices for the last 30 years. There's already a separate agency within the Attorney General's office that has been reviewing actions by oil companies. And we want to make sure that, you know, if there are impacts to fuel when it comes to climate policies, we have to address those. If there's impacts because of other nefarious behaviors, potentially, we have to address those. I will note that since we first discussed having transparency policies in Washington state, fuel costs have gone down about 80 cents, depending on where you are. And hopefully they can do what they did in California, which was kind of normalize a little bit some of the spikes that you see. So that's more of just an accountability measure that we have in place. Some of the other policies that I know that he's put forth that are important are going to be around how do you help large utilities decarbonize? And that's kind of a wonky kind of way of doing it. But when we turn on the lights and we see, you know, the lights turn on, somebody's providing that. One of the utilities is providing that. So for me and you in West Seattle, we use Puget Sound Energy if you have gas, Seattle if you have something else. But largely, there's no mechanism for them to be able to decarbonize right now from a regulatory perspective. So basically, if we're able to figure out how to help large-scale utilities like Puget Sound Energy decarbonize, not only would that be advantageous for them and for us, that could be a model for the rest of Washington state and for the nation, candidly, as well. So I think that's kind of a important factor that we have to play in. And then part of the CCA, the Climate Commitment Act that we've been talking about, it's a market mechanism, right? This was a compromise with some of the covered entities. So the fuel manufacturers, some of the larger submitters in Washington state, they wanted to have a market mechanism to help regulate their costs as it became more advantageous for them to decarbonize. And if we're able to link our market with Quebec and with California, like any market, the bigger the player, the more stability that you have. So we've seen some spikes in terms of the cost of these carbon credits. They've gone down about $15 since the peak this past summer. They're trading at about $54. The main point that you'll want to probably consider there is that it is becoming less aggressive in terms of the costs, but we do want to have some stability in the market. So being able to partner with those jurisdictions will be key for us in terms of advancing our climate goals.
Thank you. I wanted to make sure that I spoke to some of the people who have been criticizing this. Your colleague in the Senate, Republican Senator Linda Wilson, really looks at the Climate Commitment Act as a, quote, hidden gas tax. And I know you've heard some of these critiques before. Can you talk about that, your reaction to this idea that this is basically something that if you put this on the fossil fuel providers, they're going to end up passing along these dollars to the consumers? I think there's some concern about that within the Senate, too.
Oh, total. I mean, the bill itself. There's a significant amount of revenue for consigned revenue. So it's essentially relief for utility bills for consumers. We knew that this was going to be part of a just transition. What I will say is that folks are frustrated by a 20 cents increase. This is their numbers, not mine. In terms of fuel costs, they should be even more frustrated with the four times as much in profits that we've seen from the oil companies. But that's neither here nor there. I think the main point that I want to make is, you know, this is something that is expensive. Yes. This is something that we should have done 50 years ago as well, when we knew the potential impacts for climate change in our communities. When you have wildfire smoke and you're choking on that, that costs money. When you have to go to the hospital for respiratory issues, that costs money. When farmers can't farm because they have droughts, that costs money. So we are already paying for the impacts of climate change in Washington state right now. But the silver lining that we have with the Climate Commitment Act is now the funds to actually mitigate the worst of the impacts, to build resiliency within our communities, and to build an economic future that is more robust in Washington. What I will note is in Washington state, you know, we were able to pass the CCA before the federal level passed the IRA and the IIJA, which means that we've been able to get significant amount of money from the federal government. So for about every dollar that we've spent in climate policies in Washington state through the CCA, we've been able to get about five. So we've leveraged this to make about $5 or $6 billion in investments from the federal level in Washington state. So this is, to me, an investment not just on our clean future, but also literally an investment because we're able to get matching dollars from the feds, which helps support our work, which not many other states are able to do because they don't have these policies in place.
I guess just to wrap up there, you also know that there's a number of people who have signed a petition to put an initiative on the ballot potentially to repeal the Climate Commitment Act. And I guess, are you concerned about its survival? I don't know a better way to put that, but 100%. I just thought I'd throw that out there.
We take all of this seriously because I think at the end of the day, you have to take care of the residents of Washington State. And that's the procedure that we have in Washington, is that you can have ballot initiatives. And I think part of this, candidly, is, you know, folks who are trying to fill that void that Tim Iman left. But when we talk about the devastation that climate change has had in our communities, I feel confident that we can, you know, tell our story to the people of Washington State and be able to ensure that we have a clean future for all as well. But truly, you know, that we take it seriously. We are looking at ways to kind of help mitigate some of the impacts that we've seen that were unplanned for. We're already seeing that happen right now. I will say the blunt instrument of having an initiative, I don't know, that's the most advantageous way about going about climate policies. It's interesting because there's some unlikely allies who are supportive of the CCA, fuel companies, large corporations here, climate activists, things like that. This was the compromise bill that we had been working on for over a decade. So the idea that folks who, you know, may not necessarily believe in climate change think that this whole thing can be repealed, I don't know if that's going to sell well at the ballots for Washington State, but, you know, we do take it seriously.
Got it. Thank you very much for that, Senator Wynn. All right, well, coming up, what about some new investments proposed for our state ferry system? It's about time, some of you commuters are saying. Maybe you're even waiting in line for a boat right now. Well, Senator Wynn, whose district includes Vashon Island and its many ferry commuters, I know he has some input on this. We're going to talk about it coming up on Transportation Talk. Senator Wynn, I've seen the headlines. I know you have too. Ferries not on time. 38% of the boats out of service, frustrated commuters. I'm sure you hear from them too in your district there. The governor is talking about directing some funding to hire more deck officers, wants to open things up to out-of-state mariners to get the staffing these boats need. Also, there's money to build 5 new ferries, but I know that building is going to take some time. I guess I just wanted to ask this question of where and when do you see our state getting some relief for our ferry system in the near future?
Yeah. I mean, there's no easy answer. The ferry system is subject to maritime law like everybody else, which is part of the crux that we have here as well. And this is, again, one of those things where a lack of investment over time has really degraded the whole system. Vashon is in my district, so I go out there regularly to talk to residents about this issue. I will say that we have funded new ferry boats over the last 5 or 6 years. We've probably put more money towards the ferry system in the last 5 or 6 years than we have previously. The hard part is also being able to get it built. So resources is just one. Having the manufacturer to build them is another. And then having the crew to staff them is the third problem. So in terms of the resources, we funded ferry boats. They're on the way, ideally. We ended up even having to open up the law in Washington State to allow for ferry construction to be done not in Washington State. Before last year, it had to be in Washington.
State,
there's only
really
one, maybe two people who could have done it. That wasn't quite the pool that we needed. So now it is open. So ideally, we'll have a bit more in terms of bids associated with that. The other one, too, is that we funded training facilities for ferry workers themselves as well. And we're seeing Eagle Harbor pick up some new recruits in that space. That whole process is interesting because it is subject to collective bargaining. They are unionized. So we want to make sure that we're good with our labor partners in terms of how do we ensure that that exists. There's one kind of weird thing where oftentimes folks in the Bremerton area with Navy backgrounds, those hours don't quite count towards service on a maritime facility, even though it should. So we're looking at adjusting some of those things to help increase the pool of people that are there. And I think one of the biggest things that we'll do in that space as well is going to be around ensuring that there's a pipeline going forward, right? So we know that the captains associated with these boats, it takes decades potentially to become a captain. We have the high schools, we have the maritime schools, we have apprenticeship programs. We want to make sure that we augment those things where short term, get as many people here as possible. Long term, build up that infrastructure that's here. But I will say, if you're a mariner and you live in Washington State, candidly, because we're subject to the Jones Act, they can feasibly go to Canada or somewhere else and get paid potentially significant more to be able to serve in those capacities where we don't necessarily have that ability to attract and recruit because of that as well. So there'll be, you know, compensation analysis to figure out if that will likely help the system as well.
Wow, I had no idea that there were so many different pieces that you were working with.
It's
I was just seeing it as a
complex,
simple shortage of officers, but it's the training and all of that, huh?
Yeah, because the way that it works as well is the Coast Guard has regulatory requirements around the staff that you have on hand. And mm-hmm. it's not just that you have a captain and some deckhands. There's engineers, there's the boilers, all that stuff. And you would have to feasibly double the cost of headcount just in case somebody calls out. Because it's not like you just have one person on call. It's every single position basically is unique one. So you never know which one is going to be mm-hmm. kind of off that day. And then, you know, the boats are aging. They're 70, 80 years old. They were not meant to last this long.
Yeah.
We've not funded the ferry system since, you know, candidly an initiative historically, and we're just now putting it back. So it does take time to kind of get going. And the pandemic didn't hurt, costs didn't help. But those are all just factors that we have to address as legislators as we work towards figuring this whole thing out.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you loud and clear. Well, thank you for breaking all those pieces down. And I need to wrap up with you, Senator Wen, if I could. I know the holidays are always, well, they're supposed to be a good and relaxing time, but I know there's a lot of prep work that's going on for you here. I guess I just wanted to wrap up by asking, what are you looking forward to most at the start of the new legislative session in 2024? I don't know if there's a project that we haven't covered, but just some thoughts to wrap up about what you're looking forward to in the new year.
I'll be honest with you. It's not necessarily policy or an investment. This is the first year in basically 3 years where we're not dealing with a global pandemic. So imagine trying to legislate during COVID and trying to deal with the ramifications of all that's happening there. This is the first year where we're really building, and we're not just trying to dig ourselves out of a hole. We're trying to make strategic investments. We're trying to do things thoughtfully and proactive. So I'm just excited to have kind of a tone and a temperature in the legislature, which always is pretty high, but at the very least, we're not dealing with the global pandemic and trying to solve a million problems all at the same time.
Yeah. Just a real quick rejoinder here. We always talk about short session. I am always interested to see how much you think you're going to be able to get done within that short amount of time, 60 days. Any thoughts there about what the appetite for some big policy changes, et cetera, is going to be within that short time?
We'll see. It's interesting. You'll see the policies be introduced. I think you're going to see a lot of big swings. It's the governor's last year. He'll take some big swings as well. It is a short session, so I do hope that people are thoughtful. I'm in a different role where I actually have to write the budget now versus just advocate. So, I do think that there'll be some big policies that are out there. We'll see kind of how viable they are, because we only have feasibly, you know, a few weeks to pass the legislation. So it takes time to talk to your colleagues and get things done.
Very true. A lot of work ahead. Senator Joe Wen from the 34th District, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yep, you bet. Thanks, everybody listening here, too, to this Patrons First podcast of Seattle News, Views, and Brews, where you can always find out what's brewing in local politics. This podcast is on Apple, Spotify, wherever you listen. Please find Seattle News, Views, and Brews on Patreon. Show your support. Thanks for watching on Converge Media, too. Have a good holiday season, everyone. See you next time. Seattle News, Views, and Brews is an independent production of Callinan Media Services. Copyright 2023.